Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Today, we are continuing our coverage of the Neurodivergent New Play series, and we are so excited about our show and our guest today. Joining us, we have the director, Abby Davis, who's joining us to talk about the show No Entrance, which is having a reading on March 17th at 2 p.m., at Spit and Vigor's Black Box Studio, which is over on McDougal Street here in Manhattan. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting spitinvigor.com. We've had several of these shows from the Neurodivergent New Play series on. Each one has been so wonderful and so much fun to share. So we can't wait to be able to dive more into this work, No Entrance. So with that, let us welcome on our guest, Abby. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Hello, thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited to chat more.
I am thrilled that you're here. I'm thrilled that we are talking the Neurodivergent New Play series again. And I'm so excited about this show, No Entrance. I'm very curious. I mean, the title alone is like, no entrance to what though? Like, you know, it makes you want to lean in a little more and be curious. So let me start by asking you, Abby, can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Absolutely. So as the name of our series suggests, it is a new play. No Entrance is by Courtney Taylor, a dear friend and collaborator of mine. And I've been describing it as sort of an absurdist and magical take on, you know, someone's queer journey and journey with their gender identity and their sexuality. It's about community and about friendship and all of those wonderful things. It starts off with our protagonist of sorts, though we have sort of an ensemble cast, who is struggling with the medical condition vaginismus. If you're not familiar, look it up. But it also, just as a very quick note, is sort of makes sexual penetration virtually impossible. And so this person has this diagnosis at the very beginning of the play, is like a college grad, still is a virgin and is, you know, wanting to sort of explore her sexuality and can't. So she's introduced to a band of inventors and just friends, Victoria, Curly, and Helen, who give her this transformation of sorts, where she has a procedure that is supposed to make sex easier and more enjoyable. Chaos ensues, and also, you know, a gender identity crisis sort of ensues. So it's a really sort of fun, and I don't know, I won't, of course, spoil anything for the play, but I think a beautiful take on a queer journey in a, you know, a unique way.
That's so fascinating. I didn't know about that condition. I love that. And I love the take that the show is having on all of this. So how did you come upon this work?
Yeah. So like I said, Courtney is a collaborator of mine. We've worked together, I want to say just once before, but we've got a couple of things lined up for this spring. So more to come on that. But I had been introduced to the Neurodivergent New Play series. I saw a listing on Instagram that was just a call for resident director applications, and sort of had that on my to-do list to apply to and look into. And as I was doing that, Courtney had reached out to me about this play and was just sort of like gauging my interest, like wanting me to read it and just, you know, introducing me to it. And so when I learned that there was going to be a staged reading of it, I was like, oh, hell yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, I was introduced to Anthony from the Neurodivergent New Play series and was slated to direct this play. But before that, yeah, I didn't know about the show. And so this has been a really fantastic introduction to it.
It's so wonderful. Now, at the time of this recording of you and I speaking, we are about a month away from the reading, but I'm curious to know, as you're getting ready and, you know, you're prepping everything for your rehearsals and all of that, what has it been like developing the piece?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the greater scheme of things, this is sort of one of the first development opportunities that this script has received. So it gives us a lot of freedom. And frankly, I think we're all just, you know, super excited to be able to dig into something that feels virtually brand new, and we have, a kind of a blank slate to work with. So yeah, at the time of us speaking today, we've just cast the show and are scheduling our first read through with the entire cast and Courtney there as well in the next week or so. And just kind of a fun little tidbit, or just fun fact, if you will, this is the first time that she will have heard the play aloud. So there have never been any sort of readings for this play before. And obviously the stage reading is a public event, so this is the first time that everybody else can hear it as well. But Courtney sat in for callbacks that we had a couple of, or through the past couple of weeks, and she was just commenting on the fact that it was so exciting and incredible to be able to hear sections of the play for the first time. So it's been, we're still figuring it out as we go, but I think the general air of excitement is sort of driving everything at this point, and I just really can't wait to get into the room with everybody.
So exciting. I love that. I feel the anticipation on my end. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to hear the voices start to speak out the words and everything. It's going to be great. Now, with such a, I will say, a powerful issue, again, I had no idea about this condition and whatnot. What is the message or thought that you're hoping that audiences take away from the show?
Yeah, so I mean, it's the condition sort of sets the scene. Like, that is our initial issue, but we sort of realize pretty quickly on that that's just, it's something that our protagonist Charlotte is struggling with, but there's a much deeper issue and sort of, I don't want to say problem, but just like a questioning beneath that that really gets the play going. And so, as I was saying before, it's a play about someone's queer journey. And so I, and you know, in all of my work, like that's, kind of what my work has been centered around. So I'm excited to tackle another story with that, that's highlighting that. But it's about, yeah, it's about community, it's about friendship, queer friendships, and friendships between women and people who identify as femme. And it's about community care. It's about, being able to lean into those friendships and the relationships that we have with other people to help us really, realize who we are and come into who we are. And so I'm hopeful that this reading will, offer a sort of a look into that experience and how we can see that happening in our own lives outside of the theater.
That is so wonderful. I'm loving that. My final question for this first part of the interview is, who do you hope have access to no entrance?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I was saying, just about, it's a story that's about queer communities. And obviously with our producing company, we're centering neurodivergent voices, and with the majority neurodivergent cast, we're hopeful to be able to, pack our seats and get live stream tickets to people who identify within those communities or the intersection of those communities. But I also think that this play is a really, great glimpse into what a queer journey looks like. And so even if you don't identify as somebody who is from either of those communities, then I think this is a really wonderful, I said earlier, a magical take on what this looks like, because it's realistic dialogue. Like, it feels naturalistic, but at the same time, it's a very absurdist take. So I think there are plot tools that help us sort of understand what a queer journey looks like. So I think all are welcome, all are invited. We have pay what you can live stream tickets. So even if you're not, in the New York City metro area, see this play. It's fantastic.
Switching things up now, in the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit. Pick your brain, if you will. And I want to start with our perennial first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, Or just some of your favorites?
Thank you for asking this question. I'm excited for this because it's like all of my work has been really, I don't want to say all of my work, but a lot of my work has been centered around working with new playwrights. So, though I've worked on pieces by published authors and classics, if you will. A lot of my energy is focused on the communities that I'm building right now. So, and they're some of my favorite playwrights. And so I think being able to even just like sit back and be like, what plays do I enjoy reading that I'm not necessarily working on? And what do I enjoy seeing? I think just like off the bat, I've always been a huge Lorraine Hansberry fan. Just, I mean, I think as far as like modern writers go, Sarah Kane and Lynn Nottage. I'm a big Lynn Nottage fan. And then just as far as like thinking about classics, big Chekhov girly. I work primarily on straight plays, but I actually, before I was a director, trained as an actor and in musical theater specifically. And so that still has a very special place in my heart. And while I'm not working on a ton of musicals right now, I love to go see them because I'm in New York. So I'm a big Sondheim girly as well, of course. Who isn't? And I think one of my favorite musicals of all time is absolutely Hadestown, just from the composition to the staging. Like, it is just 10 out of 10 for me, chef's kiss.
Yeah, some wonderful, wonderful people on that list. Totally raging out with you to Lynn Nottage. Love me some Sondheim. And Hadestown really is a masterpiece. It really is. Kind of going along those lines, have you seen any great theater lately that you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
Absolutely. I will say that I've kind of fallen off for the past like 2 months or so because I've been working on my own theater. But in the fall and in the summer, I was seeing a lot. So I'm excited to be like getting back into the theater in a recreational, in a casual sense, just like a weeknight, go see a show after work, whatever. So I think I will say this. I actually work at the Met Opera. I do admin work with our Live in HD series. Super cool. If you don't know what that is, definitely look it up. But I recently saw our new production of Bizet's Carmen, which is like a classic operatic work. I know opera may seem a little bit off-putting to like the typical theater goer, but this production is contemporary. I think Carmen is one of the most like accessible pieces in the operatic repertoire, and the cast is fantastic. So I think that's like my top one must see. And there are a lot of like accessible pricing options too. So definitely go to the opera if you haven't been already. But something that is on my list that I haven't seen yet is Brandon Jacob Jenkins' Appropriate. I have heard just nothing but good things, and I'm really pissed that I didn't go the night that Pedro Pascal was there. So I'm going anyway, but still angry.
Oh, I love that. If only we could always go to the theater and Pedro would be there, right?
Right.
But of course, the nice thing is with Appropriate is it has been extended a third time, but this time at the Belasco, which is fantastic.
Exactly. I am just giddy with excitement. I cannot wait to go.
I'm in the boat with you. This will be great. I'm curious to know, what is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Yeah. I think my favorite part about working in theater has to be the community. I feel like that's a pretty, that's not a novel answer by any means, but so much of what I sort of champion in my directing style and approach to my craft is community-based leadership, in that when I get into a room with a cast for the first time, we all have our own interpretations, the script and our characters, and sort of what we are going to do over how many weeks that we have. But it's the directorial vision is very much a fluid thing for me. And so being able to connect with folks, like get to know them better, and letting that shape how we actually deliver a piece is just so important to me. So it's something that's deeply intertwined and in a working sense, but then it's also like we come out of a project and we're like, awesome, we've got new friends. Like, it's just a growing community. And yeah, hands down, absolutely the people that I work with.
Love that answer. And It doesn't matter how cliche it is. It's true. Theater is community. Theater's family. And I love that answer. It's so well put. And a wonderful way to snowball into my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
I have to say, this probably goes back to my college days. It was, I want to say, the second show that I'd ever directed. I have a close collaborator of mine who is also a playwright, and I've directed many of his works. His name is Matt Morse. He rocks. Find him at mattmorsewrites.com. He and I were working on a new script, and it was just, I think, from start to finish, just such a fruitful experience in that I felt very supported as an early career director, and honestly somebody who was very, very new to directing. I felt very supported by not only him and by my cast, but it felt like a true ensemble. And I think in the 2-ish months that we had to put up this piece, it was so fun. It was so fun. I'd love to work on it again. And it makes me miss the days when you like lived within like 10 to 15 minutes walking distance of everybody that you knew and friends with. And so I just think about that show a lot. It was core memory for me, absolutely.
I love that memory. Thank you so much for sharing that. Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
I absolutely do. You're so kind. Thank you. It's a busy spring, I'll say that, which is great. I'm directing two short plays as a part of the Secret Theater Winter One Act Festival. They're in Woodside, Queens, and plays open. There are different programs each night of the week. We are programs C and H, and those begin late February through, I want to say, mid-March. We'll have to fact check myself on that one. I am so excited to also be directing another one of Courtney's fantastic plays. It's a one act called The Guy Who Killed Bigfoot as a part of the Makers Ensemble's Intimate Artists Night. And I believe we're locked in for a reading on March 14th at 7 p.m. I'll leave it at that.
I love it. I love it. All the irons in the fire. Well, with all these irons in the fire, that leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about No Entrance or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Absolutely. So just plugging Neurodivergent New Play series. You can find them on Instagram at Neurodivergent Plays. You can also find me on Instagram. I'm going to have to spell this one because unfortunately my username is a little weird. It's Abby Davis, but it's spelled in a stupid way. ABBEHDEEVUHS. Or you can just look at my website, which is abby-davis.com, and send me a message there.
Wonderful. Well, Abby, thank you so much for taking the time today to stop by and speak with me about this incredible reading that's happening with this new work and all the amazing things you've got coming up. I'm sure this will not be the last time that we speak or we hear from you. There's a lot of exciting things you have in the pipeline. So this is fabulous. But in the meantime, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It has been so wonderful to talk all things No Entrance and theater, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yes. My guest today has been the amazing director, Abby Davis, whose upcoming show is being presented by the Neurodivergent New Play Series, and it's entitled No Entrance. The reading's happening on March 17th at 2 p.m. at Spit and Vigor's Black Box Studio, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting spitinvigor.com. We also have some contact information for the new play series, as well as for Abby, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But right now, make sure you head over to Spit in Vigor, and that's spitnvigor.com. Get your tickets, whether you're going to be able to make it there in person or stream it for No Entrance, March 17th at 2 p.m. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.